Sankofa and we're looking at the Asian Revolution, sometime a forgotten country in the Western Hemisphere, or we see Haiti as a negative, being poor, about strife, more coup, dictatorship, and so forth. Was this always so? Joining me via the phone lines is Sister Afua Cooper. I should say Dr. Afua Cooper, historian extraordinaire and dub poetess, and she's going to join me. Hello, Afua.
Hi, Sankofa.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Yes, I'm going to start off with some key dates, and then we can move in from there. In 1492, Christopher Columbus lands and claims the island of Hispaniola for Spain. The Spanish built the New World's first settlement at La Navidad on Haiti's north coast. In 1697, Spanish control over the colony ends with the Treaty of Ryswick, which divided the island to French-controlled Saint-Dominique and Spanish Santo Domingo. For over 100 years, the colony of Saint-Dominique, known as the Pearl of the Antilles, was France's most important overseas territory, which supplied it with sugar, rum, coffee, and cotton. At the height of slavery near the end of the 18th century, some 500,000 people, mainly of Western African origin, were enslaved by the French. And with that, where do we go from here in terms of what happened after that? But we have on the line a brother who has a show here at CHRY, Experience Creole, a brother named Ronald Jean, and he's on the line. You want to say hello to Dr. Afua, Ronald?
Certainly. Good evening to everyone, all the listeners, and Sankofa.
Okay, Dr. Afua, that's brother Ronald.
Nice meeting you.
Certainly, a pleasure.
We were just talking about how they split up the country, Spain and France, and we spoke about Christos Columbus. The slave rebellion happened between 1791 and 1803. Why was this necessary to carry out a rebellion of this type in the Caribbean?
Well, it was more than a rebellion. It was a revolution. A revolution means a complete change. It was necessary because the Haitian enslaved masses rose up to free themselves. Remember, this was slavery. The unique thing about Haiti was that this revolt turned into a revolution and was successful. There were many other revolts and rebellions and acts of resistance all across the Caribbean and all across the New World. But somehow, for whatever reasons, they were suppressed and the militia was brought out and so forth. The Haitian one succeeded. It took 12, 13 years. As I said, it was a revolution. It was war. It wasn't just France that moved against the enslaved masses. When France realized that it was not going to defeat the enslaved masses, the British, the Dutch, Spain, even mercenaries from Poland joined in the fray to dethrone the Haitian masses. Your question is, why was it necessary? We're talking about slavery. The slave system means war. When you're in slavery, you're in war. It's like you're in a battlefield. And so enslaved people always resisted. There was always resistance. From the day the first enslaved African landed in the so-called New World, there was resistance right to the very end.
All right, Ronald, could you tell us where you're from? Where were you born?
Definitely. Was born and raised in Haiti. I was actually born in Pétionville, near the capital, Port-au-Prince. Basically, I'm 100% Haitian.
That's beautiful. Now let me know. Dr. Afua spoke of why, and I think she did a very good job. I'm going to give you a name, Mr. Bookman. Can you expand on that name, sir?
Certainly. Bookman is Jamaican-born, who was one of the rebellion as well, who fought for black deal. He believed in the same ideals as the Haitian did back then, and he had a lot of trouble in Jamaica and ended up fighting his way in Haiti. And fought with the Haitian, and he had a huge movement in Haiti and very, very important role in the Haitian history.
Afua, you have anything you want to add about Brother Bookman?
Well, Bookman was one of the initiators of the revolution in August, when over 200 people met at Bois Caman. This was a site in Haiti, with Bookman and a female mambo, a woman priest, that really launched a revolution. That's where they took an oath to fight to the bitter end, death before dishonor. Over 200 leaders met at Bois Caman to launch the revolution, and they took an oath that they were going to fight for black freedom to the bitter end. So Bookman was one of those people. When Bookman died, of course, this being war, people are going to die. Some of his generals or his lieutenants, Toussaint Louverture being one of them, and Jean-Jacques Dessalines continued the revolution.
So you called the name that I was going to go to, and Ronald could respond to this. Toussaint Louverture. Could you talk about him?
Jean-Jacques Dessalines and Toussaint. It's funny you mentioning that. It all depends how you look at it. My personal opinion is that we could not have won our independence without one or the other. Although we do have certain division between some historian, Haitian historian, do believe that Toussaint is the one who did everything, but everything to me started with Dessalines, then continued on with Toussaint.
Give the people who are listening an idea of what they did, what they accomplished.
Well, to me, they accomplished one of the greatest things that any human being could do, to fight for what they believe in, and as well to ensure that people were treated in a proper manner. Black people all over the world were being treated badly, which is nowadays considered a crime against humanity. That's exactly what it was, and they fought and gave us our freedom.
We fast forward to 1804. Haiti finally won the battle. This is just the beginning. 1804, it seems like now we finally fought, we won. Move from here. For some reason, though, because so much things happened to us, what were some of the things we suffered because we won?
There were the embargo, there was a lot of pressure against Haiti, trying to use Haiti as an example to prevent other black countries from getting their independence. They did everything they could in the power to block us. But the idea of our independence actually was to give freedom to all black people. And I don't know what the word is in English, but it was to take over the rest of the Caribbean and to be all one union, to create an archipel of Haiti throughout the Caribbean.
And that was definitely grand. Afua, you have anything you want to add?
Yes, Haiti, as you said, 1804 was really the start. And what did they suffer and what did they gain? For one, Haiti had to pay France an indemnity, a reparations, if you will, which was the supreme irony, one of the supremest ironies of modern history, simply because in war, it's not the winner that pays the reparation. It's the offender, not necessarily the loser, but the offender. If you look at modern reparations, so for example, in 1991, when Iraq invaded Kuwait, Iraq had to pay Kuwait reparations and so on. Haiti paid France something like 3 million gold ducats. Uh-huh. And Haiti did this because, as the brothers said, after winning the war, there was an embargo against Haiti by everybody. Uh-huh. Haiti was to be an example that how dare you rise up, and not only that, how dare you win, we are going to punish you. So they blocked Haiti with a boycott, trade boycott, what have you. Haiti paid for recognition. Haiti paid France the money so she could get diplomatic recognition, so she could trade with people to get food and medicine and what have you for the citizens. If you think of Cuba, Haiti then was like a Cuba today. The big difference is that in 1959, when Cuba had the revolution, Cuba had the Soviet Union. Remember, when Cuba had the revolution and succeeded in 1959, every country in the Western Hemisphere, with the exception of Canada and Mexico, boycotted Cuba, led by the United States. Mm-hmm. Cuba was supposed to die and sink in the middle of the Caribbean Sea. Had it not been for the Soviet Union that came to the rescue of Cuba, it would not have survived. Haiti did not have the Soviet Union. But then there was no Soviet Union. Uh-huh. Haiti had no one. Haiti had to pay for recognition and pay France. That's why there is this movement now in 2004, something to the tune of $4 to $8 billion. Haiti's asking back France for the money because that was theft. Here's a country went through a 12-year war, lost so many people, human resources, the country being matched up, the economy being matched up, then had to turn around and pay France this money. That was just criminal. That was just so unfair.
There was also during the occupation, during the slavery time.
Yes.
To that as well. We were basically the backbone of France as well, providing with cottons, with sugar and everything.
Yeah.
So to make France what it is today as well, it's all on the backbone of Haiti.
Yes, Haiti was called not just the pearl of the Antilles, uh-huh, but the breadbasket of the Western world. This was the richest colony in the world.
We paint the picture of what happened right after, but a lot of people still don't know, so we're going to move forward a little bit to 1915. President Woodrow Wilson orders the U.S. Marines to occupy Haiti and establish control over customs houses and port authorities. The Haitian National Guard is created by the occupying Americans. Now, so here Haiti had to pay money, and several years later, the Americans invade. What did that contribute to Haiti's predicament today, Afua?
Well, if you talk about the National Guard being created, which is still with us, so to speak, you talk about the atmosphere of fear created in Haiti because of the U.S. invasion. We talk about the people who were killed as a result of the invasion. Even though there was a resistance movement to that. We talk about the American government owning up and controlling up the Haitian economy. We talk about the various peoples, meaning leaders, that the Americans, even after they withdrew from Haiti officially, the various people that they put up there as their chosen puppets.
I totally agree with you. It was definitely a preparation to get what we have today. Everything was carefully planned by the Americans to have what we have today, to still continue with the same blockage against Haiti, being the first black country independence in the world, and they're still doing everything they can to use it as a sample for everybody else. And we're still having all those same tradition passing on from generations of leaders. I even wonder if I should really call them leaders, but mm-hmm. the type of leaders we've been having in Haiti doing the thing that they've been doing. I don't truly believe that they have the country at heart. These are not people that really want to do good for the country or the rest of the Caribbean, but themselves.
And I definitely hear what you're saying. You know, moving on a timeline again, in 1957, after several attempts to move forward democratically, ultimately failed. Uh-huh. Military control election lead to the victory for Dr. Francois Duvalier. Uh-huh. In 1964. He declares himself president for life. And that's where we have the era of the Papa Doc. I remember being a little boy in Jamaica hearing about this Papa Doc, and I wasn't hearing a lot of nice things. Tell the people about what exactly the legacy of Papa Doc.
From the beginning, he had a lot of great ideas to change the system that was implemented, but I don't think he had the right people surrounding him. At one point, somehow, I don't know whether he felt fear or what have you, and then he totally changed to a different person and have different ideas as well from what he initially started. He was someone that was pro-black, for the black population. Even in Haiti, after so many years of independence, we had different type of racism, like different colors of skin. Were treated, if you had lighter skin, you had the better treatment than if you were darker. So he wanted to make certain changes to way of life in Haiti. But in 64, everything changed to dictator, created his own paramilitary called the Tonton Macoute, and it was a terror force doing a lot of criminalities, killing, beating up people, and taking control of everyone's life. And that was terrible.
I guess you want to go to the baby doc, since we're already on Papa. He died, I guess his son is declared the next ruler?
That is correct. I think he was just 18 or 19 or something like that and took over control of the country. He barely knew what he had to do. So the leaders, the Tonton Macoute leaders that Francois, the father, left, basically were the one ruling the country. And they make a real mess of the country, continued with a lot of terrors took place. I'm a survivor of some of those terrors myself, and that was for nonsense, anything. You look at somebody straight in the eyes, then they can beat you up or arrest you. Really terrible. But when everything really changed, turned sour, is when Jean-Claude actually married to his ex-wife, Michelle Bennett. And she's the one who actually starting to rob the country financially. More than anything else, I do believe François Duvalier had some kind of a system that was still doing some kind of a development going on, some positive action being taken in the country regardless of other things. With his son, there were a little bit of that going on as well. But when he got married, everything changes.
All right. The fact that, let's say, when he was ousted because the people rose up and protested and they took him and exiled him in France, did he take a lot of the money? Should we also ask for that money, too? Because if he's taking up the money and going to France to be exiled, I guess we could add that to the reparations, France kind of harboring with all that money. What do you think about that?
Yes, from what I read, he and his wife, Miss Bennett, did loot the treasury before they went on a plane and flew to France. Now, where that money is, I don't know. Is the money in France? I'm sure they must have some of it. Or is the money in Switzerland? We know that nowadays countries can get back their monies from the Swiss bank or from other national banks. So that's something I imagine that the people of Haiti would have to deal with and work out. France and all those countries, They are complicit. They are also responsible for the suffering of black people. Why would France take Baby Doc and harbor him? Or, you know, any other dictator. We saw the Shah of Iran. He went somewhere when he was kicked out of Iran. We saw Mobutu being also given refuge in France. Because, you know, their monies help to support these economies. Mobutu sent his money to Swiss, $8 billion to Swiss banks. Prop up those economies. So it's this kind of theft that we have from our countries, from the so-called third world. And you know, these countries are really not poor. And yes, so definitely, France, Switzerland, whoever else, Belgium, United States, they must be held accountable. Because this is the people's wealth. This is the people's wealth that people have worked for and struggled for.
I realize some stuff are happening here. Haiti have about 8 million or so people over there living, Ronald?
That is correct.
When you have that much people, America is very much interested in the market. What kind of businesses are in Haiti right now, Ronald?
Pretty much all local. All local business. There's nothing major foreign investment being in Haiti. It's all national small businesses owned by Haitians. There are a few foreign investment in Haiti, that, but they're not. I couldn't say there is a lot of happening in Haiti right now with respect to investment.
The reason why I was mentioning that, I was reading another article. I don't know if it was it was compiled by the Frontline staff, a magazine for Worldview. And it basically was saying that while Walmart, Sears, and JCPenney are joined by a dozen of other organizations in exploiting a labor force literally murdered and brutalized into accepting a wage which recently averaged 14 U.S. cents an hour. The Asian woman worked for around $1 a day making Mickey Mouse and Pocahontas pajamas for Walt Disney Enterprise. The U.S. owns the plant of LV Miles, which manufactures them under license for the Walt Disney Corporations. And so that's why, one of the reasons why I was asking that, do they have companies there being exempt from taxes, paying low wages to workers, and then taking those clothes back to America and selling for large profits?
That is definitely a factor. I can tell you probably 90% of them, if not more. That's basically what they're doing. And that's all they're interested in. We have the same situation happening in Haiti as well right now with all those companies. Walt Disney being one that been making most of the headlines for the past few years with respect to that issue.
Are we saying now, the people here, I think the people, all black people, doesn't matter if you're from Haiti or not, is it time after that we take a stand and start, you know, if we got to stop buying products made by France, companies that are exploiting, is it time now that we must take action?
Well, definitely it's time. If you recall Sankofa, during the anti-apartheid struggles, that was one of the strategies that people worldwide use, not to buy products from South Africa, not to support stores that trade in South African products. Mm-hmm. I know now there's a movement underway. I don't know the specifics of it, but it's certainly there for people to stop buying wine produced in France. There's a name that a rapper, Busta Rhymes, you know the song, Pass the Whatever. This is a French drink, and you have black people. Since Busta Rhymes made that song, the sale of that particular drink, which is a brandy, I think, went up 75%, if not more, in the African-American communities, and 20% worldwide.
Could I say this to you, Afua? France could fine people around the globe shying away from its products and cultural events if a boycott requested by the Global African Congress, GAC, is taken seriously and acted on.
Yeah.
And that's the chairs from Toronto, Sakaya Thomas, had called for a boycott. And I think, you know, even if we start from the grassroots level and then move out, I think it's still a start.
Yes, it definitely can happen, because we've seen it happen. We've seen it happen with the South African products, with people in their anti-apartheid struggle. And why I know it can happen is because if you look at the South African parallel, it wasn't governments or any big moneyed people that launched this thing. It was grassroots people. It was working people. It was stay-at-home moms. It was students, unemployed people, union people that formed the grassroots of the anti-apartheid movement in North America and in Western Europe, and succeeded. We got banks to divest out of South Africa. People said, well, if you bank with that particular bank, do you know you're supporting apartheid?